Football in Europe sponsored by betonbrazil.com. It's the betting site for all sports punters with great odds, markets and offers.
Listeners to this podcast can now get up to £60 deposit match when you use the promo code FIE60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter promo code FIE60 when you deposit and we'll match your deposit up to £60.
Also look out for our daily happy hour offers between 5pm and 6pm. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. BetOnBrazil.com is for over 18s only, and betting should be fun, so please gamble responsibly.
You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm your host, Rob Daly. Alongside me, Chris Parrott. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
Lots of things. We swore never to talk about the Ballon d'Or, but we're going to speak about the Ballon d'Or because it's been announced. Atletico have a new stadium and a new badge coming up. There was an awful attack in Turkey, unfortunately. And we'll also go through all of the other notable stories across Europe.
Certainly. OK, Chris, delayed podcast today, 24 hours later than normal, because of the Ballon d'Or.
We got us back for deciding to do an odd sound effect as opposed to a...
I know. We were being so rude about the Ballon d'Or, but we do have a winner now, and it is Ronaldo. Fourth time, 2008, 2013, 2014, 2016... And we're not really surprised, no?
I mean, this year, there's the age-old debate. I think even the most ardent Lionel Messi fan would have to say this year it was Ronaldo. I mean, he won the Champions League and he won Euro. I honestly think Griezmann was the only real candidate, given that he reached the final of both of those and was top scorer at Euro. But then it's a year award this season. Ronaldo's been far better than Griezmann as well. I think Ronnie definitely deserved it. And still, it's interesting because there's all these awards now, but you have to say the Ballon d'Or is still the one that the players...
Yeah, I mean, did you see that he had... Ronaldo was... Obviously, the affiliation with FIFA's ended and he got given the award just in what looked like the reception of France football, which I prefer it, just a less flashy thing. And there is that FIFA... We'll talk about that FIFA awards in a moment. I mean, also, when we talked before, I think we were both leaning towards Griezmann. I certainly was. And then as it got closer and when I was reading the figures, it was like, no, it's Ronnie's. Ronnie's.
I guess it has to be because I understand why it was. I generally think this year, over the course of the year, I don't think there's very much in it. Griezmann was the best player in the last... from January onwards until the end of Euro. For me, he was the best player in the world.
But that's what we're voting on, isn't it?
It is.
Essentially.
But are we?
Griezmann didn't lose it. After the Euros.
Or are people voting on what they want? Or are people voting... I swear that Lionel Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo always get a swing because of who they are. But in saying that, this year, you can't argue against it. He did win. He won the main two prizes that any player was going up against in Europe anyway. It might have been different had Lionel Messi won the Copa America. I still don't think it would have done. You know, Ronaldo won the Champions League and he won Euro.
Yeah, I mean, Messi did win the double with Barcelona. He scored 50 goals in 50 games in 2016 so far. By the way, just a reminder of the situation with the Ballon d'Or. It's no longer a FIFA event. That affiliation, I think, ended back in September. Can't quite remember. But France Football have been doing it with FIFA for 6 years. France Football's been running it since 1956. 173 journalists vote in the Ballon d'Or. And best, which is the FIFA...
Not us yet.
The best FIFA awards, and not the computer game. The best FIFA awards is going to be in January. Look at these figures for Ronaldo, Chris. Do you want to just go through some of these? Because they're absolutely outrageous.
54 goals last season.
Yeah.
In 2016, 38 goals in 14 games with 14 assists.
In 42 games.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, in 42 goals. Including this season, 19 goals in 20 games. And given that... Lionel Messi has vastly outscored Ronaldo in the Champions League thus far this term. I mean, they are extraordinary figures. They always are. And he joins a great plethora of players to have won it four times too. And it'd be surprising if he's not there or thereabouts again. But, you know, that's the only thing. What this shows is it's going to take someone to have a truly remarkable season to beat Messi or Ronaldo. Because Griezmann... Remarkable year, I should say, as it's a year award. Because Griezmann was pretty special.
Yeah, I wonder if, say, he'd banged in the winner in the Euro final.
Definitely. Or won the Champions League. Or maybe not even this season. Had he started off and scored 20 goals already, maybe. But, yeah, it's a difficult thing to vote on, actually. The good thing is it's voted by journalists, so you'd like to think maybe it's slightly more impartial. Although, I say that, I imagine that the Welsh correspondent voted for Gareth Bale. Maybe yeah. not, but, you know...
Bale finished sixth behind Neymar and Suarez. Vardy and Mahrez finished inside the top eight. Lewandowski was fairly... He made it clear that he was critical of finishing.
He was,
he finished
yeah.
something like 16th or something.
Well, yeah, I think Lewandowski just generally maybe feels a little bit hard done by. I think there's this notion that he didn't have a great Euro, which he wasn't free scoring, but he did lead Poland to the quarterfinals. They lost on penalties to the eventual winners, Portugal. Given they'd never won a game in the final tournament before
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And given that maybe he scores so many goals, and it's a bit like that Messi-Ronaldo debate. When they don't go three games without a goal, other players wouldn't get criticised, and Lewandowski does. So I can see maybe why he was a bit upset. But ultimately, there's one winner. He was 16th. I think it was a bit tongue-in-cheek as well. And I'm sure he was ahead of Thomas Müller.
Yes, I think he was. Who is finally up and running for Bayern this season in the league. By the way, Ronaldo said in the interview with France Football, who run the Ballon d'Or, that the recent financial allegations made against him in football leaks about tax evasion, he says it's completely ruined the pleasure of winning the prize. We'll keep across that. But Cristiano Ronaldo, the Ballon d'Or winner, and we won't talk about it again for...
12 months.
Okay. Let's mention, because the top five players, I think, all came from La Liga, maybe top six. Let's talk about the weekend's results in Spain. Real Madrid beat Deportivo La Coruña to go 35 games unbeaten. Ramos with another 90th minute winner.
New record.
New club record.
And all this for a side who allegedly aren't a vintage Real Madrid team. It's interesting that, isn't it? I mean, people had that criticism of them after they won the Champions League. And definitely this season, they're not playing, you know, they're not free-flowing. I mean, they've 35 matches unbeaten. They've won away at Atletico.
But we were sat next to each other for that Dortmund game. Were you that impressed?
No, I wasn't. But
they're getting results, aren't they?
They are getting, and I mean, if they improve, I mean, as we heard from Joe Casanelli the other week, if they start losing now whilst playing like this, then all the accusations will come out. But, I mean, the more positive way of looking at, I'm sure Zidane will, is that, you know, they're in the middle of this transfer ban as well. And if they improve, then they'll presumably keep on winning.
Yeah.
And they're going to be very hard to stop in La Liga anyway. Thrilling games as well, you have to say. I mean, they might not be battering teams 4 or 5 nils, but they're involved in some really exciting matches.
They certainly are. Elsewhere in the weekend, Barcelona won 3-0 at Osasuna. Vicente Iboras got a hat-trick for Sevilla. Zaiste third with a win at Celta Vigo. Ultras attacked Valencia's team bus after their weekend loss. They were on their way to training in the days after that, but because of the weekend loss against Real Sociedad, this doubts over Prandelli's future as Valencia head coach. Only there since October.
I believe he's been called to Singapore, where Peter Lim, of course, is based, or certainly has companies, which doesn't bode particularly well. But if ever there is a club where the manager is only a small part of the issue, then I think Valencia is that.
Yeah, oh my God.
You know, you get the
picture. You're turning through those managers like that...
Absolutely,
it's you.
Managers who have achieved, apart from Gary Neville, managers have achieved an awful lot in the game. But yeah, and also Atletico, who are on the biggest dip maybe since they've become a major force under Diego Simeone.
Sixth in the table now after a 3-0 loss on Monday to Villarreal.
They've lost four of their last five games against teams in and around them as well. I mean, that isn't, you know, and as you mentioned there, you're talking about them losing, they lost 3-0 at home to Real Madrid, 3-0 away to Villarreal. This is a team who, if they were beaten, it was only ever by, you know, one, maybe two games in an extraordinary situation.
Yeah, 3-0 doesn't happen with them, does it?
It doesn't. And, you know, they're only just outside of the top four, which is minimum requirement. But it's a tricky situation. And there does seem to be a feeling that, you know, they have these world-class players like Godin and Griezmann. And if they were to have a bad season, and all the rumours about Simeone, is he going to go to Inter? When's he going to go to Inter? They lose one or two of those key personnel, including their coach. It'd be very interesting to see what would happen to them. I'm not writing Atletico off, but
no.
this is a tricky situation and one which they were always going to encounter, and they have to deal with it.
Interestingly, Jan Oblak picked up a shoulder injury in the game. I haven't checked the last few hours to see if anything fresh has come out about that, but Simeone says that injury might be worse news for them than losing that game. And I think maybe he might have been the best goalkeeper in Europe this year, Jan Oblak. But there's been lots of talk, Chris, at Atletico this week because they've revealed the details of their new stadium, which they move into next season. And they've also revealed a new badge, which is almost like a simplified version of the old one.
It's the modern way, isn't it?
But I think it's... Do you know what? So they've taken a few of the colours out of the badge, haven't they? And they've made it a bit more simple. I think it's something to do with... And I might be talking rubbish here. But I think I remember this from the Everton badge. Do you remember when that Everton badge came out and it was like barely anything on it? They took the... I forget what they took off the Everton badge. Oh, that tower. You know that tower. But I think it was something to do with it's cheaper to print in that way. So if you... We've put the badge on our Twitter page. It's all like three colours and it's all like a thing you could print very easily. And I think it's something to do with cheaper... Printing it cheaper onto merchandise and stuff like that. Simpler to do. There's some reason that people are doing this to their badge.
And it's nothing to do with the marketing team wanting to do a rebrand.
There is that as well. There is that sort of... Yeah, you've paid an agency $2 million to...
I don't know. Why do you need to change your badge at all? You haven't need... I mean, there was actually a good thing Atleti tweeted how their badge has evolved since 1903 when it was entirely different. But I just... Stick with your badge. I don't know. I mean, it's like you know, West Ham's badge when they've now put the word London on it.
Oh, that's... Yeah, I mean, do not like that at all.
We could do an entire podcast about West Ham, but they're not in Europe, so we can't.
We were going mad about West Ham the other day. By the way, the details of the new stadium, which is in the northeast of Madrid, they move there next year. Their old stadium was called the Estadio Metropolitano de Madrid, and they were there from 1923 to 1966. Mm. They've been at the Calderon since then. The new stadium will also take the name Metropolitano, but with Wanda... I think you pronounce that Wanda. I'm not quite sure. Might be wrong.
Vanda,
maybe. Named after the Dalian Vanda Group, Chinese company who own a 20% share. It might make them 100 million euros over 10 years. Do you take that, Chris? Do you slap a sponsor at the start of your stadium?
I don't like it. Call me
You don't know. We don't like it.
Call me old-fashioned.
But you've got a name in there. Like, the Emirates is the Emirates, isn't it?
Yeah, but no, I actually...
And the Etihad.
But you know some things are... are sponsored and you wonder what on earth a sponsorship gets out of it. Apart from in UEFA terms where, you know, at those games it's not called that officially. It will just be called the Metropolitano. But I do think if you're a sponsored, a ground's a good one to have because it says so much.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, Emirates, Etihad, all those stadiums. The McAlpine, not now called the McAlpine. Anyway.
The Sports Direct Arena.
But that's another interesting one because that stadium is a long way out of town. They're moving from an iconic cauldron, which the Calderon is. How many times have we heard all those players talking about that? So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's going to be a brilliant stadium, but it's a long way out.
Yeah, I'm thinking of trying to get to the Calderon next month.
Yeah.
Like, you think there's Leganes play in the morning and Atletico play in the afternoon, so you could see two games in Madrid in one day. It's 12 and 5:30 kickoffs.
And you could get to the Calderon before it shuts.
That's exactly the reason. Okay. More on the way. We're going to be talking about some German football and the Champions League and Europa League draws.
This is Football in Europe.
Football in Europe, sponsored by Bet on Brazil. It's the betting site for all sports punters. Great odds. Listeners to this podcast can get up to £60 deposit match when they use the promo code FIE60. Just visit betonbrazil.com and enter the promo code FIE60. When you deposit, and we'll match your deposit up to £60. Sign up now at betonbrazil.com. Over 18s only. Betting should be fun. Please gamble responsibly. Lovely message from our sponsor there, Chris.
Yes. And do you know what? Talking of odds, listeners to this podcast will have heard us eulogise about Monaco and Nice. Very good most weekends. I don't know why.
Well, you get good prices on them.
Nice were 8-1 to beat Paris Saint-Germain. They didn't. We'll talk about it in a moment, but they were 2-0 up at half time. cash
so
out.
So I would have lost that bet.
No, you would have cashed out.
Cashed out.
You would have said, this is a cash out.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about that in a very brief moment. Chris, tragic events in Istanbul again. And it's not the first time that we've seen terror attacks. This time, 2 hours after full-time of Beşiktaş Bursaspor at the Vodafone Arena, which is... But Beşiktaş is relatively new home.
Yeah, built on the site of their old stadium right by the Bosphorus. Absolutely, 38 people killed in it. I think it mostly targeted police officers. It doesn't matter who it targets. So the majority of the fans and the players had left, although it was caught on Beşiktaş, his own in-house TV channel. But terrible scenes wherever it is. And then when it, you know, it resonates with you more personally, as a football fan, because we've all been to grounds, and the idea of going and never coming home is absolutely horrendous and tragic for Turkish football and for Beşiktaş in particular. And as you said, not the first attack in Istanbul in 2016, yeah. Even.
No, I mean, we went there together. It would be a decade ago now, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And we were going between all the stadiums back then, and it was... Did we manage to get into the old Beşiktaş one?
We did, yeah. I mean, it's a wonderful venue. It's one of the best venues, I think, because certainly the old stadium had the one end which was higher than the rest of the three sides, so you could look out
crazy,
over
yeah.
the Bosphorus. The Vodafone Arena is a sparkling new ground. It's part of, you know, this very exciting Beşiktaş team, even though they didn't get through in the Champions League. That there's a feeling this is their time.
Mm.
But yeah, tragic events in Istanbul.
Just when it's something where big people are going to have fun,
yeah.
This is when it stresses me out. You think back to France, Germany. It's like you're trying to get away from all the stress that you're thinking about. You're seeing the news all the time. I also saw Slaven Bilic, former Beşiktaş head coach, of course, saying, by the way, it's tearing me apart,
yeah.
What's happened there. Okay, Chris, next, let's talk about Germany. Because I want to talk about sporting directors, which I know does not sound very exciting.
We want to speak about pennies and pounds.
We do. Okay, a quick mention for RB Leipzig. Beaten by bottom side Ingolstadt. First defeat of the season for Leipzig. Ralf Hasenhüttl left Ingolstadt in the summer for Leipzig and suffered that defeat. And it means a Bayern after a 5-0 thrashing at Wolfsburg go back to the top on goal difference.
Wouldn't it be funny after all we've spoken about whether after the next two games and the winter break, Bayern have won the summit?
Oh, yeah, well, it might work. I mean, we've still got Leipzig to play Bayern as well, haven't we?
Yeah.
In the midweek in December, which should be absolutely fantastic. But Klaus Allofs, who's the sporting director of Wolfsburg, they've already changed their manager this season. Dieter Hecking was sacked. Valerian Ismail was brought in to replace him. He's lost 5 of his 7 games in charge. And the buck falls with Klaus Allofs, a sporting director, and he's gone. He joined the club from Bremen in 2012. And I suppose with that kind of thing, Chris, we don't really have the sporting director model or I forget what you'd even... director of football, all these things.
Well, I'd go as far to say as we are very sceptical of it in this country.
Resistant.
Whenever, in the odd occasions, a sporting director is appointed... And we'll forget about Tim Sherwood because he clearly was appointed manager at Swindon. But but normally it says, well, the manager's going to be sacked and they don't. Whereas in not just Germany, but particularly the Bundesliga and the second Bundesliga, this is their model they go with. As an aside, quickly, Wolfsburg, that's a very interesting story, I think. So they've lost their coach and their sporting director. They've admitted that partly due to that Volkswagen emissions
scandal yeah.
They are basically the club is being remodeled from one that spent big on players, huge money on players, to one which is going to look, you know, towards the youth system, I think. And
that's right. That's what they said.
Yeah, and that is a, you know, long term that might be more sustainable. And they're not a huge name. We know that they're called a plastic club, and in Germany. But short term, that's quite hard to get points. When, you know, we've talked about Julian Draxler, who wasn't in the squad, I don't think, at the weekend.
No, they didn't take him.
So he's almost certainly going to move somewhere in January. Maybe the Premier League, who knows. But, like, as soon as they start losing those stars and you see more Bundesliga football than me, this is the sort of team on paper that it looks like, if they're going to try that mid-season, could easily go down.
Well, I think they're looking to sell Draxler. You know, not having him in the squad is like, look, we need to get you off the books quick.
Yeah.
You're big wages, and someone in the Premier League will overpay for him. I don't even know if he scored in the Bundesliga yet this season. So, I mean, they are talking about this. And part of the issue is as well, when the emissions scandal broke, everyone said, OK, who knew about who was interested in football said, what does that mean for the team?
Yeah.
And they, in a way, they sort of misled fans. They said, this isn't going to affect us at all. But obviously it was. They were going to build a whole new youth academy that was something like 40, 50 million euros. They've scrapped that. I think they'll sell Draxler and Luis Gustavo, who they could probably get decent money for, the Brazil international. Massively underachieving. But I think it's interesting that part of the problem in England is you have your team and they sign players and the team's not getting results. And you go, OK, change the manager, right?
Yeah.
When really the culpability of that sometimes probably doesn't fall on the manager. I mean, the Liverpool one's a great example of that messy transfer committee business.
Definitely. Absolutely. And at lots of other clubs, I think you see, and sometimes managers know exactly who they want. And then, you know, you hear so many of them saying, I give them the list and beyond that, okay, I'll make a couple of phone calls if I know them and, you know.
Sweet talk them or whatever.
Sweet talk them everybody. But ultimately, they don't have the checkbook. And I think a lot of coaches, and they can never publicly come out to the press and say so because it's their boss and no one does that. You'd be mad to.
Yeah. And but in Germany, you know.
In Germany,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a lot more open.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more accountability because the sporting director, as you see in a lot of occasions, gets sacked. Or if they do a very good job, it's a transfer, essentially. Mm. You know, I think have you seen Schalke do it?
Schalke changed theirs in the summer. Hamburg have just got rid of theirs as well.
Yeah,
you know, there's quite a few clubs that have done it.
But it's a whole new transfer world, if you like. And if you do well at your job in that, you get elevated.
Yeah, I mean that's what happened. Well, obviously did well at Bremen and ended up at Wolfsburg. I'm sure someone will come in for him again.
Well, I mean, great. You know, anyone that's got almost 60 caps for his country and enjoyed that career that he has.
Yeah, oh my God,
he's going to be in and around football.
And he signed De Bruyne. Signed De Bruyne and he sold De Bruyne for three times.
Yeah.
And he played that well in the media, hung it out to the end of the window.
Yeah.
He did all right with that one.
He did. It's interesting because I commentated on Gladbach against Mainz at the weekend. And
yes, the Gladbach won, did they?
Yes, 1-0. It was, I'll get onto the game in a moment.
I saw a bit of the first half. It was terrible.
It was one to forget. Didn't have to commentate on it. but no.
No, I watched it without getting paid.
That's a very good point, yes. It was a hobby. No, and again, you had a coach 8 games without a win in the Bundesliga under massive pressure. Max Eberl had come out and said after he lost to Barcelona, that doesn't matter, it's our next 3 Bundesliga games that count, which is basically saying, got 3 games to save your job.
Yeah.
Biltl had said he had to get 7 points from it. So you got this guy under pressure on the edge of his technical area and quite literally breathing down his neck is the sporting director on the bench.
Mm, yeah, it's quite common there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But when they're under pressure, it almost seems alien from if you're watching the Premier League, for example, because you're like, you know, the TV cameras zoom in on Schubert and then a second later zoom in on his boss. And it's
almost 2 steps behind
him. It almost feels unfair.
Yeah, exactly.
But
that's a contrasting situation because Eberl's, as we talked about, been linked with Bayern, becoming the next sporting director of Bayern. And Schubert might be on his way out. But
absolutely.
They look poor. They look good at the start of the season. They were free flowing, and Torgan Hazard looked great, and Stindl and Rafa.
They looked totally devoid of confidence.
Wow!
He left Hazard on the bench, brought him on. He made a difference at half time. They must have had 4 or 5 counter attacking opportunities where you thought, okay, they didn't even create the chance at the end of it. Booed off at half time, got a scrappy goal, Christensen with it. Even then, you know, they were so tentative. And then Mainz equalised after 88 minutes and the goal was disallowed. And it was a shocker. It should have been a goal. And maybe that bit of luck will be key to Andre Schubert. But you've never seen a team, given they're in the Champions League, given they finished top 4, who just looked so devoid of confidence home.
Chris, I'll ask you this now, because we're near the winter break in Germany. That's the 22nd of December. Is this a good time to... You know, they all go off to Spain and Turkey. Is this a good time to sack someone?
Yeah.
To make the change, I should say, really.
And you never, ever want to see a manager sacked. But I think the performance for a club of that size as well, you know, they're not going to go down. Of course they're not. But when you do finish top 4, you just wonder. And also, I always think, and this is very unfair on Andre Schubert, but if you are a coach who has, you know, 5-10 years of experience... then you have something, you have credit in the bank, you have stuff to fall back on.
Yeah,
promotions.
He was under 23 coach, wasn't he? So maybe he doesn't have the credit.
And you just think, maybe some fans and maybe his sporting director's like, well, you know, maybe it was just momentum last season, you know, because he took over after Favre left and did a brilliant job. I wonder if that won't help in his favour. We'll have to see. But it's certainly a better time to sack a coach than it would be in England when you're just coming up to the Christmas period.
This is the worst time to do that. Okay, Chris, I'll do Italy in a quick fire hit before we talk about the Europa League and Champions League draws. I'll do Italy and Portugal. No, I'll do Italy. You do Portugal and France, okay?
Yes.
So, here we go.
This
Juventus,
is exciting.
Juventus beat Torino. I saw a bit of this, actually, the Turin derby the weekend.
We should have a clock ticking.
We should do. We'll add that next time. Juventus beat Torino in the Turin derby. Higuain struck twice. Roma stay within 4 points of them after a 1-0 win over Milan on Sunday. Joe Hart made a great first half side to Mario Mandzukic. And in a week when Claudio Bravo, you know, questions about him again and his actual goalkeeping, shot stopping, Joe Hart did make a good save. He hasn't been perfect there. He's made mistakes, but he made a good save against Mario Mandzukic. Okay, Portugal and France, Chris, you mentioned Nice there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. 2-0 up away at PSG, which that could well have been the end of Unai Emery had they lost that game.
Yeah, and that's Lucien Favre. I mean, what a job.
What a job
he's doing.
Finished 2-2. Still a very good result from Nice's point of view. It means they stay top. Monaco, they won again. We'll get into the Champions League draw, but I honestly think any Manchester City fan that thinks they've got an easy ride into the last eight, we'll have another thing coming in February. And Portugal, big Lisbon derby. Benfica won by 2-1. Jorge Jesus with an unhappy return to the Stadium of Lights. And one great tweet, actually, from James Fielden, who's someone we know, Rob. He was there. And I think basically, when they finished their warm-up to run back into the dressing room, Emirates is one of their sponsors, they ran through a fake check-in desk.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're joking, Chris.
I wish I was joking.
Well, they had the little...
They had the check-in lady behind the desk and then some red carpet with Emirates on it.
We've lost it.
Football's dead.
We've lost football.
This is the last Football in Europe podcast, unfortunately.
That's non-football people, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we talked... I'll get angry.
All right. The sort of thing my girlfriend would really like, though. That's the worst thing.
What would you say?
She said, oh, that was clever, wasn't it? And turn around and say, no, it was not. Have yourself another hot dog.
Yeah, oh, God, get me a beer.
That's why, yeah.
Good. Okay, that's good to know. That's good to know. Well done, Benfica.
This is supposed to be quickfire.
All right, I've just finished voicing the Eredivisie review show. So I'm all up on my Eredivisie, Chris. Ajax were beaten by Twente.
Yeah.
1-0 last minute goal. Feyenoord looks so good. 4-0 winners at AZ, but they're out of the Europa League.
I know.
Beaten by Fenerbahce at home.
I mean, that's another terrible result for whilst we're on Dutch football, because we're going on to the Champions League and Europa League. PSV pipped by Rostov. Feyenoord, who are flying, are out. Finished behind United and Fenerbahce.
Yeah, I think AZ and Ajax are the only teams still in Europe from the Netherlands.
You know, it's a very, very long time since the Dutch side got near the latter stages, certainly in the Champions League. And you think of all those great Dutch sides. The coefficient is nowhere near.
No. I mean, isn't the Eredivisie something like officially ranked the ninth best league in Europe or something like that? I think that's where it is in the coefficient.
Yeah.
Behind everyone, Portugal and Russia and...
Yeah,
and Turkey maybe Turkey's the other.
And given the changes in UEFA rules, where you're going to have the top four ranked nations all getting four teams guaranteed,
like even Italy,
it's going to mean a right old scrap for those places below. Which, if you're the ninth best association, you're going to really struggle to get a group stage team.
PSV beat Go Ahead Eagles, bottom of the side, but only beat them 1-0 at home. CM De Jong seemed to get booed by some supporters when he came on. Former Ajax player got his first goal for PSV to win the game. He showed them. Champions League draw.
Yes.
Okay, so it's City, Monaco, Real Madrid, Napoli, Benfica, Dortmund, Bayern, Arsenal, Porto, Juventus, Bayer Leverkusen. You're laughing as well. Don't try and stay silent. It's funny.
That's really funny. Third time in five seasons. And even after Bayern finished second. They tweeted something which was...
The Bayern United States account, which is really funny.
It was a gif of Ribery getting out of a helicopter saying, should we book our tickets to London now?
That was spot on.
It's so good.
Porto, Juve, Bayer Leverkusen, Atletico, PSG, Barcelona again, and Sevilla, Leicester.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty open, wouldn't it? Might be bonkers, that tie.
Yeah, it could be. I feel ever so slightly sorry for Leicester. It's a...
Why is that? Because they haven't got the Barcelona tie Bayern.
I think for their fans, perhaps, if they went out of the Champions League in maybe their only ever campaign, who knows? They didn't get to play a Bayern or a Barcelona or a Real Madrid. Mm. I mean they can beat Sevilla. And we saw how they dismantled Manchester City. We've seen how well they've played in Europe. It'll be a really good tie. Don't get me wrong.
But you never know, they might get through it. Then you're definitely, surely getting someone.
And then you're in the quarterfinals. I think it's Arsenal's third time in five seasons at this stage. You'd have to say...
It's their best chance. Get a result against
They've signed a proper central midfielder. Granit Xhaka has been nowhere near the price tag, but he strengthened them. Certainly, he was very good against Stoke at the weekend. Mustafi, who's out injured, has been a massive plus. Both those guys know German football very well. They should go there and think that they can win. Bayern are in a slight rebuilding process, I think. I'm sure they'll get better as the season goes on. But Arsenal are going to have to believe. That's the first thing. Arsenal are going to have to believe they can beat Bayern.
Yeah, and Lewandowski, by the way, did score a hat-trick against Wolfsburg at the weekend. And he's just... in the last hour of us recording this, signed a new contract.
Yeah.
And I think he's easily the best played player at Bayern. Now, that's still 2021. Man City, Monaco. So I'm sure some City fans would have seen Monaco a little bit this year when they killed, particularly at home. I know it only finished 2-1, but they destroyed Tottenham.
They did.
Tottenham were nowhere near their level, crazy.
Beat them at Wembley. Manchester City... aren't very good defensively, to put it lightly. Monaco have scored more than 50 goals domestically.
Leonardo Jardim has not been known as a coach to get goals. They've been known as a defensively solid team, if anything.
Perhaps because of the players he's had at his disposal. This was the first summer they didn't lose all of their stars. They've got some of the best young talent in European football. Bernardo Silva, Lamar. I think it'd be a really, really good tie. I'm genuinely looking forward to. And you know, certain coaches... they'll do well, and all of a sudden they might turn up a really big side. And you know, Jardim took them to the quarterfinals 2 years ago when they beat Arsenal at this stage. And I think they'll look at that, and it's a very difficult considering they won their group. But they certainly won't go to Manchester City and be overly concerned.
No. So lots of great ties in the Champions League. Standout ones in the Europa League, aside from Manchester United against Saint-Étienne, which we'll see Pogba brothers face off against each other, Florentin and Paul.
Do you know the last English team that Saint-Étienne played on English soil? Who was it? This is my Ruben for the week.
Okay. Was it Liverpool?
No.
Damn it. What is it?
Come on. Look at the big smile on my face.
Oh, you?
Yeah.
Town?
Yeah.
When?
1980-1981 UEFA Cup. Saint-Étienne hammered 4-1 away.
Wow.
In the quarterfinals of the competition. Hammered at Portman Road, 3-1. Out, 7-2 on aggregate. Michel Platini, Johnny Rep. See you later. Ipswich Town went on to win the UEFA Cup.
Very good.
Yep.
Very good. Standout ties.
I imagine you'll be hearing lots more about that, of course, before their trip to Old Trafford.
How are Town getting on at the minute? Okay. Villarreal,
you said
Roma.
This is quickfire.
Villarreal, Roma is a good tie.
That is a really good tie.
Gladbach, Fiorentina's tasty.
Yep.
And then Spurs have got Ghent, who got to the Champions League round of 16.
Round of 16, yeah.
Last year.
They have, you would expect Tottenham Hotspur to go through in that time.
I mean, both United and Spurs should be able to rotate their squad six or seven players deep, I think, in terms of six changes in the weekend Premier League game and still get through those ties.
I think so. Really. It'll be a brilliant atmosphere in Saint-Étienne for that return. There's some decent ties.
Villarreal and Roma, one of those knocking another one out.
Yeah.
Villarreal got to the semis last year. I mean, when do you think... I mean, Spurs or United will fancy their chances of going quite far, won't they?
Yeah, definitely.
And they might not make... Neither of them might make top four.
No, I think they'll be... I name drop. I spoke to Mourinho last season. And the way he speaks about Porto's win in 2003 with a young squad, okay, with a few aged players. So, like, they would never, ever have won the Champions League a year later had they not won it. So, you know, and you can make parallels with that. Yeah, United have got Ibrahimovic, but they've got a lot of guys who have never won a European trophy. So I'm absolutely sure both, and that's the same with Tottenham. Lots of these guys have won lots of games, but they've never won trophies. And until you ask any great manager, until a side has won trophies, that gives them that extra bit.
Exactly. It does. Chris, I think we're done. Good show. We're going to be back on Monday, and that's basically going to be sort of, we're at the winter break stage, and then there's going to be a podcast of our team of the season so far,
where I will actually pick 11 players.
What did you do last year?
I picked 11, and then having said Daniel Sturridge is a must pick,
You did the England squad. No, we're doing from all the leagues. Do you remember we did that last year?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I still have to pick 11 players.
That's true, yeah. Don't muck that up as well.
We're also going to pick a coach of the season.
And coach of the season so far.
And a club of the season.
Nice. Okay. Leipzig, Hasenhüttl. Okay, there's good options there. Tweet us at FIE Podcast. Let us know your team of the season so far. That would be great, because I think we're recording that next week and then putting it out maybe on Boxing Day or something.
It's almost Christmas.
It is almost Christmas. Okay. Done and dusted. See you next time.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.